You're listening to Rewired and Inspired with Lily Beyond, episode 53.
Welcome to the Mental Fitness School podcast, where we talk all things rewiring your brain to become the inspiring person you're meant to be, inside out. And now to your host and favorite coach, Lily Beyond.
Well, hello, my friend. Good to have you back. To help you be most equipped in figuring out a strategy that works for you, finding your way to keep burnout at bay, I think it's crucial to know what you're actually dealing with. And I remember back in the day when I was heading right into my full-on burnout shutdown, I had no guidance, no pointers to look out for that could have helped me to maybe even prevent some things. Because often it really is like this imaginary monster under the bed. The thing builds up in our mind. It becomes this unbearable thing we have to somehow figure out to deal with. And instead, if we would have had some guidance, someone who helped us look under the bed and check out, hey, what is actually down there? Maybe it really is just a little dust bunny. But we make up this huge story in our mind that it is this huge monster that we will never be able to conquer. So this is what I see here as my contribution to the conversation to help you understand what you're actually facing. Because it is still a rather new topic, because most of the research that's done on burnout, it is just considering professional burnout up until this point. In most official clinical literature, even in the ICD-10s, it has been for years just defined as professional burnout. And only within the last 5 years or so, the work on parental burnout, for example, has begun. We're really just scratching the surface of understanding what's actually happening. And especially the last couple of years, where we as a collective got more aware of systemic workers and people who are actually on the front line, keeping our society alive, and the burden that they are carrying every single day. Not to mention moms when they have to take care of kids while working at home. And I know, if I have some older listeners here, you all went through that alone. No one even bothered asking how you're feeling while doing that. But society is changing. We are growing up. And you're here today because you most probably still have some scars from back then that are now ready to heal. So thank you for showing up for yourself. And my space here is essentially inclusive of men and women and everything in between. But naturally, I want to focus more on the female aspect of things and the things that we unconsciously pick up because we got conditioned to do it, and shedding some light of the load that we as women are carrying. The helping out, the rising awareness of mental health, and getting more sensitive, which can even lead to compassion fatigue. The firefighting on important tasks that have to get done because colleagues are sick or stuck at home taking care of their loved ones. It is messy. That's why we need some clarity on what components to look out for in yourself and maybe even in others when you feel like, oh, there is someone in your circle who's currently not taking care of themselves at best. So it is good to know what telltale signs to look out for, because people who are not sick are always worried about the people around them getting sick. And yes, also this is a perfect storm for burnout. In the past 40 years since the original formulation of burnout, research has found that the first element of burnout is emotional exhaustion. It's most strongly linked to negative impacts on our health, on relationships and work. So I want to start off with giving you a primer on emotions. I think this would be helpful to set some notions straight on what is an emotion. What inspired me to do this particular episode with that amount of research to back it up? That it is inspired by the book Burnout, The Secret to Unlocking the Stress Cycle by the amazing sister duo, Emily and Amelia Nagoski. And I want to give you the most important gist of what I found most compelling and important that people know about. And starting by defining what an emotion actually is would have been something that my 20-year-old me would have needed to hear. Because when I was 20-ish, I was not convinced 100% that emotions are like a real thing. I sort of had this image that emotions are this airy-fairy, somewhere out there feeling, something we could consider if we had the time to do it, but it's actually not necessary. And if you know me now, I'm an emotional manifester by human design, so neglecting this huge part, not only of myself, but of humans in general, was not the healthiest thing and for sure a main ingredient that led to my two burnouts. And I needed science in my 30s to prove me that emotions are real. Even though I was literally a professional event manager, evoking emotions in my audience for a living, I was not fully accepting the full spectrum of truth around it for myself. So let's talk about emotions. Okay, so emotions are cycles that happen in our physical body. They are neurological events. That when I say neurological, I mean not just happening in your brain, but in your whole nervous system, head to toe. The intelligence of your body extends in your nervous system, from the top of your head to the tip of your toes, and also beyond your skin. It's super fascinating. And nervous system regulation is an essential part of my coaching work with my clients. So emotions are an involuntary neurological response. They have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I'm so happy that I can recite now these kick-ass women scientists to back me up on this, because it makes more and more sense the more often you hear it. You can look at the feeling like a tunnel. You have to go all the way through to get to the light at the other end. Just about every system in our body responds to the chemical and electrical cascades activated by emotions. What again? Every system, our digestive system, our neurological system, our physiology responds to chemical and electrical impulses activated by emotions. And it's so funny to me in my work now how much time I spend trying to help people understand, because people really want to believe, and myself included for the biggest part of my life, that we are cognitive, rational beings who on occasion feel like once or twice a year on New Year's and your birthday, when the truth is that we know now from PET imaging for the last decades that we are indeed emotional beings who on occasion think. So I'm gonna quote this from the book because it's so good. I just want everyone to take a deep breath now. In short, emotions are tunnels. If you go all the way through them, you get to the light of the end of it. Exhaustion happens when we get stuck in an emotion. And the book further reads, we may get stuck simply because we are constantly being exposed to situations that activate emotions. Our crush is here all day, every day, if only in our thoughts. And so we are trapped in our own longing for our crush. Or we return to a stressful job. You're connected with people in need all day, every day. Sometimes we get stuck because we can't find our way through. The most difficult feelings like rage, grief, despair, helplessness, and shame may be too tedious to move through alone, and we get lost, and we need someone else, a loving presence that helps us find the way through. Many of us are trapped in this way. Boom, mic drop. Hey, I tell you, this is so freaking real. The power of co-regulation that happens in a coaching container is everything. I'm gonna talk about nervous system regulation in a different episode, but just for now, this is really something to consider. Growing up, we had our caregivers who helped us co-regulate. When we are crying at night, they soothed us to calm down again, to fall asleep again. But now as grown-ups, we don't have those anymore. We are stuck with our own baggage. So that's why we need coaches or skilled professionals that help us regulate our nervous system to be able to process and go all the way through the tunnel to let an emotion leave our system. So emotions have a beginning, middle, and an end. And a lot of us are taught to believe that if we fix the problem that caused the stress or the emotion, that we kind of dealt with the emotion itself. In truth, it's just not done yet. There is a disconnect in the world that we live in now between the behavior and how we deal with things in our lives, like staring at our crush across the room. There are things we can do to deal with that, like when you bravely go up to them and you're like, hey there, here is my name, how are you? And then you leave the room, and do you suddenly feel peaceful, relaxed? And yes, I dealt with the situation. I feel like I took a step forward. No! You have to scream in silence in the bathroom or call a friend, because you still have to deal with the aftermath of this feeling of bravery you just took. This is a separate step from dealing with the issue itself that was activating the emotion in your body. Most of us are taught to believe other people's opinions about our bodies more than we believe what our bodies themselves are trying to say to us. So we believe when we were told that, well, I mean, you dealt with the issue, so you should be done feeling by now. We don't want to hear about your feelings anymore. Your feelings should be done because the situation is done, so let it go. Hearing about you and your feelings. And you are like, I must behave myself emotionally so that I do not interfere with anyone else's well-being. So I'm now officially done with the feeling. And your head is trying to tell the body, I'm officially done with the feeling now. And you smile and you shove it down into some organ system, and you don't know which one, and then it continues to live inside of you. And this is not necessarily the worst choice that you can make in that moment. In some moments, smiling and being polite, walking away and shoving it all down can make you safer. You don't want to confront every douchebag on the side of the road that yells, "Hey babe, nice tits." This would not be safe. So you would squash it down and you would hide it. And then you get home and you're like, "I'm such a strong badass. I just ignored that guy." But now you have to finish that feeling. You have to process that emotion all through. Get the rest of the way through the tunnel to let it leave your system. For these little moments, we often know how to digest the emotion. But what the bigger things, the things that we tried so hard our lives not to look at. When your self-worth is attacked, for example. Facing the question, what's the purpose of life? And is this all there is? There is so much emotional load below the surface that's causing this latent emotional exhaustion. You will notice the symptom of that as a reduced bandwidth. So like with a computer that's overloaded with too many tabs open and too many programs running in the background, the bandwidth, the processing bandwidth, reduces and it gets slower. And the same happens with your emotional and your mental system. Things that a while ago didn't bother you at all, and suddenly they are immensely triggering to you. Before we start talking about this piece around separating stressors and distress, let's talk about that human giver syndrome, because it's tightly related to shoving things down and not trying to look at things. It's a phrase adapted from the book by the moral philosopher named Kate Mann called Down Girl. What she does, she lies out in this book a moral system where the world contains two kinds of beings. Human beings, whose job is it to live, to express, to be in their humanity, and they have a moral obligation to acquire whatever resources it takes in order to accomplish their moral obligation. And on the other hand, you have the human givers, those whose moral obligation it is to give their humanity, their time, their lives, their bodies, their feelings to the human beings. So women, and as well men, can have a very dominant human giver syndrome. But predominantly in our society, it's the woman who needs to be the pretty one, feeling happy, good and sexy, be calm, be generous, be attentive to the needs of others. It's been conditioned for centuries. I know we are making very good strides into a more liberating direction, but it's still worth mentioning that this is a process. And if we at any time fail at our moral obligation to be pretty, be happy, be calm, be generous, attentive to the needs of others, then we deserve to be punished. That was the conditioning of the past centuries that we are still processing. And if there is no one around to punish us, we will just go ahead and punish ourselves. And if our partners won't beat us up for not being happy, pretty, calm, and attentive all the time, we'll just go ahead and start metaphorically whipping ourselves for the ways that we fell short of being able to save humanity and everyone in the world by self-sabotaging, by over-consuming to feel just something other than this sticky guilt and shame, or overworking to feel relevant. It's really just like if you don't have a strong drive and sense of identity, you better stay quiet and small and just take care of other people, basically. That contributes to the second component of burnout, which is the decreased sense of accomplishment. When you don't know who you really are and you just buy into the strong dynamic, trying to find your place at least as the giver, doing that eventually leads to the third component of burnout, the depersonalization. It's all interlinked and the devil's wheel is complete. These are the three components of burnout: emotional exhaustion, decreased sense of accomplishment, and depersonalization. And we now know that emotions are real. They are science. They are neurobiology. They are in our bodies. And they affect everything that we do all the time. I love this visual of thinking like emotions, like electricity. For the longest time, you didn't know how electricity works, how emails work, like how Wi-Fi works. But we got to the point where we accepted that this exists. And we notice when it's working. And we notice what to look out for. And the same goes for emotions. We know they have a beginning, middle, and end. And we know that we have to move all the way through them to have a healthy digestion. Like we have it with food, we need to have it with our emotions. They have to move through our body. Because when we get stuck in the middle of the emotion tunnel, stress is building up. Stress that might later lead to numbness, anger, or sadness. And all that just to protect yourself. Because the body is simply on overdrive. I took this from the book of these two scientists, so you can hear this right now. The cardiovascular system, our blood vessels, are designed to tolerate a steady sort of pulsing stream of blood flow. And when your adrenal levels go up, which leads to your blood pressure going up, it's like a fire hose spraying in your garden hose level blood vessels. Your system, thank God, is competent in dealing with that. If it lasts as long as it's supposed to last, which means about 10 minutes and then it's over. Our body can deal with that. What our body cannot deal is with days, weeks, months, decades of built-up stress that's clogging our body literally inside out, reducing our bandwidth to one click per minute, which of course is freaking frustrating. So we humans living now in Western society, we stay in this state of chronically elevated stress for hours, days, weeks, months, and years at a time. And it makes sense that this causes wear and tear of our blood vessels, which causes weak places for plaques to develop. And this is how stress causes heart disease. And this is just one of the systems. Your digestive system, your brain, and your nervous system. Like I personally experience with my chronic headaches every single freaking day. Those 10 years in this high-paced event industry, I'm still processing those, to be honest. It's so deeply engraved. The wounds run so deep. That patience and compassion are two of the most potent remedies for healing stress and overwhelm. And at the same time, the absolute hardest to access when you are in a stress cycle and on the verge of burnout. That's why there are people like me helping you co-regulate, getting you into that place where your nervous system can finally cool down again to think straight again. You still with me? Let's go one level beyond. Now that we know what the three components of burnout are, emotional exhaustion, decreased sense of accomplishment, and depersonalization, what can you do about it now? First off, you gotta learn to differentiate stress and stressors. This is one of the most crucial things to learn in life. Learning to differentiate what are the circumstances and what is their effect on me. This will give you immense power in the whole process. Your stressors are things that activate a stress response. And they're mostly external. So think of your work, kids, money, social conventions, communal rules, even capitalism and society as a whole. Some of them are also internal things like body self-criticism and your trauma history. All those things can activate a stress response. The stress itself is what happens in your body. It's this chemical stew that gets activated in response to the thing you're observing. And it's designed to help us evolutionarily survive the stressful situations, like being chased by a lion or a hippo, as those are actually the most dangerous mammals on Earth, except for humans. Fun fact on the side, you can actually get trampled by a hippo. So what do? You run. And imagine you manage to run away from the hippo because hippos actually don't have a lot of stamina. So you run all the way and someone waves at you through that door, into a safe space. You close it and you shut it and the hippo gives up. And it's like, never mind. And you look at this person who just saved your life and you feel this rush or this exhaustion, but also this joy to be alive. And it seems like the sun is shining brighter and you love your friends and family. You appreciate life to the fullest again. And you're just so grateful to be breathing right now. It's easy to think that's the hippo that went away that made that happen. But it's not. It's the running. It's the connection that activated that gratitude. Your body knows what those behaviors are. That you say to your body, you have to escape from this stressful situation. And your body is now in a safe space for you to be. It's the behavior, it's not the change of environment that triggered that physiological change. So let's go into slow motion and walk you through this. Removing the stressors doesn't mean the stress cycle is complete. Let me say that again. Removing the stressors, that thing on the outside, that boss, that job, that person, does not mean the stress cycle is complete. Which means two things. It means that you don't have to wait for all the stresses to go away before you can start feeling better. But it also means that when the stresses do go away, it means that you have to deal with the stress itself separately. It's two different things. A little anecdote from my personal experience. When we were in this event showdown mode with 1.5 million budget, 150 international speakers, private chats, navigating hurricanes, organizing acts for the after party, heavy supercar prototypes brought into this 500-year-old imperial palace doors, the stresses were on an all-time high. And then the event happened. The stressors went away. The next day we were done and I thought I would feel amazing. But no, I collapsed. I got sick. Every freaking time. I felt terrible. Every single year. And the more events we had each year, those drops just happened faster and faster. And I didn't know back then how to deal with that. Even though this climax had happened, I felt bad. And it was because all the stress of that work, even though the stressor was gone, I haven't dealt with the stress in my body. I turned to argue with myself. Hey, come on, buddy, it's over. No reason to get sick now. Pull yourself together. I had a couple of doctoral students I coached over the years, and I kept warning them that when you turn your dissertation in, this thing you worked so hard for years to finally complete, and you're really done with your rewrites and everything, you are going to hit a wall, and it's going to be painful. And they're like, no, come on, I'm not hitting a wall. I'm going to the Caymans. And you know what? They all get sick. And I even have this with my employed clients that dream about this luxurious vacation that finally will change everything. And so many of them get sick or something bad happens on the vacation. Like, what is happening? It is because we never learn to deal with the stress once the stressors are gone. You have to do something that signals to your body that you are safe. Or else you will stay in that state of neurochemical and hormonal degrading, but never shift into relaxation. Your digestive system, your immune system, your cardiovascular system, your muscle system, your nervous system. If they never get the signal that they are safe, they won't know they are safe. And that's the thing about the body. It speaks a different language. We know all about body language. And that's not just an interactional thing. It is also the language your body is trying to speak to you with. You're living with a lifelong roommate and you never learn the language to actually speak with them. How awkward would that be? You want to learn that language. You want to learn to read the signals, to signal your body, hey, we are safe. Your body speaks a different language. Your body speaks body language. Your body doesn't know that filing those taxes means that you've accomplished something. Your body doesn't know that weekend means that you can relax and recharge now. You need to speak body language and fulfill the thing that needs to be fulfilled. People so often don't get that we cannot separate the body from affect emotion. And this is why we call it feelings, right? Our central nervous system only has a limited amount of bandwidth. And if you're super stressed, there's a lot of noise on the highway of your brain and spine. And your immune system communicates with you through the nervous system via symptoms. That's their language. They're sending you symptoms. So if your symptoms are like, hey, I have a headache. Hey, you're exhausted. Your brain is like, what? I can hear you over here. Let me finish this project first and then I'm listening. So your bodies keep sending you those signals, those symptoms, and your brain thinks like, oh my God, I'm sick all the time. You're walking home from having this important meeting and you're like, I'm really not feeling well. And you get that you have a fever by the time you're getting home and congestion headache by the time you lay down. And then you spend the next days in bed. It's not because all of a sudden you got sick. You were sick all along. But now your immune system can finally get its voice heard over the noise of all the stress. The stress itself will kill you faster than the stressor ever will. Unless you do something to complete the stress response cycle. While you are managing the day's stressors, your body is managing the day's stress. And it's also absolutely essential to your well-being, the way you're sleeping and eating are essential, that you give your body the resources it needs to complete the stress response cycle that had been activated. It's like you spilled water, you take the sponge and soak up all the water. And where do you think the water is now? You also don't leave the water in the sponge saying, hey, I'm done. You have to drain off the water so the sponge can recover and be reused again. I personally have my habit of walking. I think this is for me the perfect habit I can do to move my body, to signal it, hey, it's working, I can process while I'm walking. That's why I invite you to go on a walk with me each week with a new episode. That's a good sign for your body that you are completing your stress response cycle. Hey, I hope this overview cleared out some clouds for you. and you have a clear idea now what's actually happening and causing your situation. Again, to repeat, the three components of burnout to look out for are emotional exhaustion, which means that fatigue that comes from caring too much for too long. Component number two, depersonalization, which is the depletion of empathy, caring, or compassion, looking too much outside and not within. And component number three, the decreased sense of accomplishment, feeling that nothing you do will ever make a difference. Why is that? Because you always looked outside and not within. So what's the cure for all of that? Looking within, understanding your body, understanding how your brain works, how your thoughts influence your feelings and your actions and your results. And this is what we're going to fast track once we work together in our coaching containers.
Ready to deprogram your self-sabotaging patterns? The Mental Fitness Starter Training is open right now for enrollment. Once you are rewired and inspired, the real fun begins. Go to mentalfitnessschool.com to join class today. Thanks for listening and see you in class.